Welcome back to Birds of a Feather Talk Together. This week is a little bit different than what you're used to. Amanda and I took a trip down to Florida, and instead of picking a single bird for our episode, we decided to just talk about all of our different birding experiences down there with John and Shannon. From osprey and brown pelicans to black skimmers and American oyster catchers, we saw a ton of cool birds and learned even more from John and Shannon. John and Shannon shared a little bit about when they've traveled to Costa Rica as well, which was super cool. We kick off the episode talking about the eclipse for a little bit, and then get into our episode. It's a lot of fun recapping everything that we saw, and how birding in general has made travel even that much more enjoyable. We also plead our case for each bird in our final four, and then we'll post that on social for you all to vote on. Okay, go grab your binoculars, maybe some suntan lotion, and let's get into it.
Yeah.
Did you guys want to talk about the eclipse a little bit?
Yeah.
Sure, we can. Yeah, we can mention it. Yeah. Did you guys do anything?
So we did not this year, but the 7 year ago one, I went down to Southern Illinois and had like a really cool experience. So I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that if you guys are cool with that. And I kind of didn't have the same experience coming up to Chicago this past one. I mean, are there any theories of like, you know, the way birds are reacting or anything that you guys feel comfortable talking about? Or...
No, I think it's fine. I actually wonder whether it's a little over hyped, but
oh yeah.
I mean, we were sitting on the steps of the museum and I saw, you know, there was actually nothing moving right at the height of the eclipse, but then as it started to go away, there were gulls and double-crested cormorant and stuff starting to fly around. And so I don't know whether, you know, they always say, well, things start going to sleep and all this. And I guess there is some of that, but it's
oh, yeah.
The duration is pretty short when it comes right down to it.
Right, right. And especially if you're not in the path or whatever. But so last time the eclipse came through 7 years ago, I went down to Southern Illinois just with a few friends. And we were reading on the news, you know, how like every hotel room was booked up. It was like everyone was flooding down there. And we got really lucky and found it was a winery in Southern Illinois that opened their doors to allow people to camp there. And it was like nobody had really known about it. We got there and we're super lucky. And there were only like 12 other campers there. And we drove through all this traffic and everything. And it was, you know, news crews were everywhere. And so we camped overnight and then woke up the next morning and then the eclipse was at like 1, I think. And so we didn't really know what to expect, just, you know, we were excited for it. We were kind of like reading online what to expect and they were saying, you know, observe the birds, observe nature. And there was a thing that said that humans will have like an audible gasp. And so we were laughing about that, like, okay, whatever. And, but so sure enough, when the eclipse came around, it was, you know, we were in the path of totality. Everything got super dark. The temperature got much cooler and we were near this pond and there were a bunch of fish that started jumping out of the pond and we heard crickets making noises. And I thought I remembered hearing birds making noises, but I could have been wrong. But it was, but sure enough, people started gasping. Like we were looking around and all the different people at our campsite were like, oh, and so, I mean, it's true that when you're in the path, there is kind of this like visceral reaction. Like it's kind of this instinct in you that something is, you know, not right here. So I, you know, kind of was curious about birds and all that. And in my head, I remembered birds making noise, but I could have been wrong. And so just this past week with the eclipse, I was so excited, but me and Amanda weren't able to go down to the path. We both had to work, but I was able to watch it kind of from the roof at work. And I was expecting to hear, you know, something. And John, it's kind of like what you were saying. It was a little disappointing. And I feel like there wasn't much reaction of anything. And so I was like, maybe didn't remember it quite the same way, but I know for a fact there were fish jumping 7 years ago, and that was pretty cool, and crickets making noise. So
we went out on the front of the museum and there were lots of people out there, and so the audible gasp was neat because everybody had their glasses and were looking through them at the eclipse. But I was thinking that initially there were no birds for the totality or the 93% or whatever it was in Chicago. And almost immediately as it began to come back and get brighter, There were gulls and cormorant and other, you know, species starting to move around, crows.
Cool, cool.
We were on a work Zoom with people from Norway, and it is getting closer and closer and closer. And eventually John just said, I'm going outside. So we ended the meeting and went outside. So it was, I mean, there are some studies that looks on that. Audubon magazine talks a little bit about what they think would happen to birds as it gets dark and cold like that. And so there are some studies. So there's a guy named Andrew Farnsworth, who is one of the kind of the prominent people in bird migration. And he talked about the fact that it does get darker and cold, which signals to birds to just be quiet, to go down. But when it comes back up, the sun comes back out, it doesn't have the same effect that the night, the true day to night transitions have on birds. The sky got a really interesting color. It's like the saturation of blues went way up. And I found that really interesting. And then the most obvious place for me with that is I looked at our solar panels, and you could see this, you could see very clearly the solar panels just going to nothing at that time. And then you can see it coming back up. So we should put that on the Instagram for the podcast, because it really, for me, that was the most dramatic thing that highlighted that, yeah, it really did get dark.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is very cool.
Cool.
And everybody in our neighborhood was outside too, which was kind of interesting. I didn't hear gasps, but the whole neighborhood started emptying out into the streets.
That's awesome.
It's fun because it's like a communal thing. It's like one of the few things that everyone is experiencing at the same time, whether you like it or not. I feel like there's not a lot of that anymore, where you can stop what you're doing and no matter where you are, you're next door neighbor, someone down the block, they're all going through it. So
yeah,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for us, that was when the Cubs were in the World Series. That was an all out in the neighborhood, everybody experiencing it at the same time. The same was true, what is that, 17 years ago for the White Sox? We have these really great neighbors, and they work in technology. So they brought out a projector, and we had a giant screen on someone's house. And so we sat in the neighborhood and watched the White Sox win the World Series.
Wow.
Cool.
At night with, you know, all the kids around and everybody around watching it giant on one of the neighbor's houses, which was fun. We have a really nice neighborhood. Our neighbors are great.
That's awesome.
Jeez. I'm a White Sox fan, so I resonate more with that one than the Cubs championship. Well, Shannon.
In the Cubs, it was later because it went into extra innings, right? It was pretty late at night when the Cubs won. And everybody poured out into the streets then, too. So, you know, even though, what is it, probably 11 o'clock at night? It was late. Anyways, and everybody went out in the neighborhood that day, too. John, you weren't here for that. You weren't here for either one, were you?
I was in Brazil for the Cubs.
For the Cubs, when the Cubs won, I was living in Colorado, and I grew up in Libertyville, which is a northern suburb, and then my neighbor at the apartment I was in Colorado grew up in Park Ridge, another suburb. And we had like never talked. Like, I think we'd like lived next door to each other for like 2 years. And like, we literally like had never had a conversation or anything, but besides said hi. And like, I knew he was from the Chicago area. And then that night, like, we watched the game together in my apartment. So we got this like intense bonding experience. And then after that, we were friends. So it was awesome.
I mean, that's some
I
of
do
the,
feel like
that's some
it
of the
really
best
brings
and
you
worst,
together.
The best and worst of sports, right, can happen. You know, we've been in the stands. I used to be the manager for our son's hockey team. And even when they're 7 and 8 years old, you know, the stakes are pretty low for someone who hasn't even reached double digits in age. But the parents Holy cow. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So it can bring everybody together. These common shared experiences. I mean, it is hard these days to have such impactful shared experiences.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, speaking of shared experiences, you guys went down to Florida.
Yeah.
We did. Yeah, yeah. We had a blast down there and saw so many different birds and wildlife. And so just like a little backstory. So growing up, I used to go to Sanibel Island, and there's a wildlife refuge down there called Ding Darling that both my grandparents Ann and Jim Scott worked at. And so growing up from like a really young age, we would go to Ding Darling. And I wasn't as into birds then. It was more just wildlife in general. But Sanibel is unique that they have gators on the island, and, you know, there's manatees. We would see roseate spoonbills. And so it was just a lot of fun growing up. But haven't been back to Florida since we've been as like into birding as we are now. So Sanibel got like decimated by a hurricane a few years ago. And so we were trying to find somewhere that was kind of similar. And we heard about this Anna Maria Island. So we went there for like some warm weather, but also with hopes to see some birds. And so this was, I mean, Amanda and I, for the first time before a vacation, or, you know, on eBird and trying to figure out what we can see and really doing a ton of research. And so we just had a ton of fun seeing all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, Amanda, do you want to maybe talk about the first day we saw an osprey? And we ended up seeing a ton of osprey almost every day. But yes. Amanda, do you remember that first one that we saw?
I do. So we were we had rented e-bikes and we're just biking on the street. And RJ was in front of me and stopped kind of suddenly. And I was like, what's going on? And he pointed up, and there was a osprey that had like a live fish in its talons, and it was up on a telephone pole. And this was just like on this 2-lane road. And we pulled over like onto the sidewalk and just watched it probably for a few minutes and stuff. And the fish was alive the whole time.
Squirming.
So, but it was incredible because it seemed like it was so close by, and it's this huge, you know, really impressive bird, and this fish that a big fish that's like still alive and kicking and stuff. And yeah, it was incredible. I couldn't believe, you know, we just went on a bike ride and saw that like pretty quickly. So it was something. What did you think, RJ?
Yeah, I thought it was so cool. I remember growing up on Sanibel, there's all these posts, you know, for osprey nests, and where Amanda and I met in Steamboat, there were posts for osprey nests, and we would see osprey nests there too. And there's one of those same like telephone pole posts near the Skokie Lagoons that's always just been empty as long as we've lived there. And like every time we ride our bikes past there, I'm like, when is an osprey going to move in?
Yes.
So they don't use that one, but there is a pair in Skokie Lagoons.
Really? Is there really?
Yeah, there's another site.
Really?
And so that's a neat bird because just like bald eagles, which we're going to be talking about soon, their populations decline during the period when DDT was causing eggshell thinning, because it gets into things like fish more readily than anything else. And so they were having really low nesting success. So their populations plummeted in a lot of areas like the Midwest, although they still did, I think they held on pretty well in places like Florida. But they've expanded a lot and gotten more common across a lot of those areas.
Oh,
when we go to the Jersey Shore with our friends, that's one of the things I like the most, is when you cross from the mainland onto the islands like that. One of the first things you see are ospreys sitting on the posts, nesting on the posts, and kind of signifies, okay, we're by water. Here we are.
Yeah, yeah, that's
yeah.
So
we were
cool.
Surprised at how like frequent we saw them down there.
Yes.
It was like, you know, a couple times a day we'd see one either flying overhead or, you know, on a post.
Yeah.
So they're probably, I think they might even be feeding young now. It may be a little bit early for that. But, you know, once they start feeding young, they're going back and forth all the time to catch fish, bring them to the chick.
We saw one pull a fish out of the water when we went on a kayak trip too, and we saw an osprey pull a fish out, and it was flying overhead, and we saw it like transfer the fish back and forth between its like talons, like it was in its left one and was trying to, but we could see it like fidgeting to try to get a better hold on it as it was flying. It was kind of cool to see.
Yes.
So we always like to point out to people when we use the birds for touching, the specimens that we have in the museum that we show kids and things. If you run your fingers on the inside of the foot of a osprey, the scales on the feet are really spiny. And again, it's an adaptation to help hold on to those slippery fish.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Very cool.
What else did you see?
So we obviously saw a ton of brown pelicans, and pelicans, I feel like everybody loves pelicans as far as like the seeing their big pouch and everything, but we really thought that they were like, I was impressed. Just, I forgot how big they are.
They're huge. I was so surprised too.
How they're pretty impressive, like flyers. Like we'd see them maneuver for that big. I don't know. Like sometimes we thought, oh, that looked like some type of bird of prey or something. And we'd look closer and it was a pelican when it was up in the sky, just the way that they could move. And then also to be that good in the water, like we were, I don't know. What do you guys think about pelicans?
Oh, they're tremendous. And it's another species that was affected by DDT negatively back in the 60s. And so their populations have recovered really well. And I don't know whether you could say they've adapted to be around humans, but they certainly have figured out how to use piers and things like that to roost on and things like that. So their numbers are really impressive along the East Coast now.
Pelicans are ridiculous when you look at them. And sometimes they're not very graceful too when they land, but I can't help but every time I see them think that their closest living relatives are shoebill.
Oh.
So when you think about it, every time I see a pelican, I'm just reminded of that part of the tree of life and how it was so much fun to learn that set of relationships.
Oh, wow.
So pelicans are more closely related to shoebills and this thing called a hammer than they are to other things that have been traditionally placed in the order Pelicaniformes.
Oh.
Wow.
That's so interesting. That makes a lot of sense to me, just like looking at their faces and like the way their eyes are relative to their beak. Like that rings true to me, but that's so interesting. I didn't know that.
And brown pelicans are neat because they're the only, there are a couple species of brown pelican now, but they're the only of the group. The other pelicans are all white pelicans. And all of those white pelicans are actually kind of surface feeders. They don't dive like the brown pelicans do. They actually move around. Sometimes they move in groups and they dip their bills in and they use that pouch that they have on the bottom of their bill to just have small fish actually build up inside it.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so we would see the brown pelicans dive and it's really like this kind of awkward, like abrupt, the way they hit the water, they almost like turn, like it's like they are going down and their mouth kind of catches and their body kind of like hooks around it. It's like this 180 degree turn as they hit the water. It's like, that's gotta be a lot of pressure on your neck and on your jaw and on your beak.
You know, there's competing interests there because if you want to dive, you want your face, your beak to be pretty streamlined so that you don't have these concussive forces or these painful forces like a belly flop when you hit the water. But then again, you want your pouch to be able to open up so you can stick a bunch of fish in it all at the same time. And these are not the morphology that you would need to simultaneously have those things both advantaged. Well, it doesn't exist. So I think that's responsible for the ungainliness that pelicans seem to have when they're diving into the water.
And it's neat, you know, coming back to the ospreys. I mean, so they're catching, like you said, like you saw, much bigger fish than the average brown pelican is catching when they dive.
Yeah.
And they're not using their feet to carry it or kill it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. I was reminded, one of the birds you guys talked about in Cape May, the black skimmer, we saw one of those or a couple of those on the beach. Yeah, RJ, do you want to talk about the beach birds we saw?
Yeah, so the beach that was near where we were staying was full of a lot of people. And we were like, let's just walk down the beach and see if we can see any shore birds or just see what we can see, because there weren't a lot right where we were staying. And we went down and, you know, started seeing more and more. And then eventually we saw some black skimmers. And there was this area where we saw like there was like 9 different species, all different, like hanging out together. So we saw laughing gulls, a ring-billed gull, black skimmers. We saw a bunch of American oyster catchers, which were so cool. And they're like beautiful.
Yeah.
And then we saw there's so many terns too. So royal terns and sandwich terns. And then willets, sanderlings. And then there was like a massive gull that was bigger than everything else. And so we looked it up. And so we think it's a lesser black-backed gull, which I think is
could there be great black-backed gull down there? I'm not sure.
Maybe it could have been. So the great is huge. Even bigger, right? I mean, the biggest. So we actually looked out in the water and saw this bird that was trying to like, it looked like it was floating, trying to like take off. And at first we thought it was an osprey that had like landed in the water that was trying to get out. Cause we didn't have our binoculars with us, but we saw this thing in the water and it was just kind of like rocking back and forth and about to take off and then would stay down and eventually was airborne and came and landed. And it was a gull and it was, had brown coloring. So it wasn't, which I think is that immature if it has. Yeah, but it was just this massive. I mean, it was like the size of an osprey, this thing. Yeah, it was so big.
It was
and then
huge.
It landed. So, yeah, we were, trying to figure out with Merlin what it was. So, yeah, we thought maybe lesser black-backed. We looked on eBird as well. And I think, John, there were people that had seen lesser black-backed gulls there before. So I think that's why we just thought it was that. But either way, we were pretty blown away at just the size of it.
Yeah.
What you're seeing is something that I love about the coastal areas is you get this view of community kind of ecology and all these different bird species that are sitting on the beach together and coexist because they do different things associated with exploiting the resources that are available to them.
Yeah. And it was really cool because like you could see in this big clump of all these different kinds of birds, like some were sleeping and then others were like, you know, grooming and others were just like talking to each other. Like it was so funny because you knew they must have felt like this is like a safe place because we're all together. That was my impression. Like somebody will say something if something bad happens.
That's true. I think it's safety in numbers. And then the other thing I think that's going on is you've got this mixture, things like, you know, the laughing gulls will be there year round, but a lot of the sanderlings may be coming from South America, you know, so you've got a whole mixture of birds at that time of year in terms of where they are in their annual movements. So a lot of those shorebirds breed much farther north than there. Mm.
Did you see the skimmers skimming in the water?
We did not, unfortunately.
No, I wish. Yeah.
Now, that's a beak that is specially adapted to how it eats. So if you look at it, it's tapered with and very narrow so that it's like a knife blade going through the water. And when they fly with a bottom beak down so that they can snap up fish that they feel. Or I guess they probably eat other things that are in the water too, but yes, and that's something, if you come into the museum, you can go look at a skimmer up close to see it up close, because the pictures don't, in videos, are not the same as when you look at the beak close, look at the real beaks up close.
You saw them on your trip out east last time you were out there, right? I think, John, you sent us a picture of one that was skimming.
Yeah, so they breed all the way up. That's about the northern limit of their distribution is up in New Jersey, probably. They don't get much farther north than that. That's an interesting group because there are species of skimmers in all the major tropical continental areas of the world, which is, you know, how do they get there?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we were on the lookout for monk parakeets and didn't have any success, and we saw them on eBird and went to this like little forest preserve area where somebody had seen him the day before. And we were like wandering through the woods. We heard some noise that we thought could have been it. And we had like our Merlin app open trying to see, and it ended up being, do you remember, Amanda? It was some prairie warbler.
Oh, we were chasing through. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that call.
Oh,
song.
It was, yeah.
It was really
But
pretty.
We got back into town, and on Easter got together with my family, and my aunt and uncle were actually at Anna Maria Island just like a few weeks prior to us going there. And they're not big birders, but they are nature lovers and they get out and stuff, but they don't bring their binoculars. But they were like, oh, did you see parakeets? And my aunt pulled out her phone and she had this picture of all these monk parakeets that they had seen just while they were walking around. We like put in all this effort and they were just wandering around and saw them.
So was her picture from like a tree in the neighborhood?
I think they were on a telephone line, maybe. A power line.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to, maybe we'll make a pilgrimage one of these days down to the Skyway in the south side of Chicago, and we can, for the nest site that's down there.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how they tend to live in urban areas, and they don't really get out of the urban areas all that much. And so they're probably hanging around somebody's feeder because the people know they'll come in if they put food out for them.
Oh,
that's
interesting.
Crazy.
Yeah, we'd love to see the Chicago parakeets at some point. Yeah. And then, Amanda, is there anything else you want to
talk about? About the cormorant. So we did a sea kayaking tour, and at one point a cormorant was following like our group, and RJ and I at different points we were each in, everybody was in single kayaks, and he and I had binoculars, so we would kind of lag behind because we were looking at different things. And when we were kind of separated from the group, this cormorant just came up to my kayak and would just go underneath and do like a zigzag pattern under me while I was kayaking for a long time. And we saw that cormorant catch two fish, and it was so exciting because I had never seen one like up close like this. And I had a lot of affection for him for him or for her, but I could see, you know, how pretty the beak was, like how bright orange it was, and the eyes were almost like turquoise. I mean, it was just so pretty. And I think when I look at them like long range through binoculars, I'm like, oh, whatever, you know, but seeing them up close, I was so excited. So yeah, it was like, yeah, I felt like I made a friend.
Yeah. I mean, that's the power, so right? That's the power of being outside and the power of your own observations of something, not just living through a picture book. Those are fine. Or someone else's photo. Those are great too. But there's something, it goes to a different part of your brain, both the emotional centers and the memory centers are different when you see them up close. That's why I like dead birds so much, is because they do have that. I know it sounds crazy, but they do have that power to let you see them close up and experience them like that.
You're so right, Shannon. I feel like that's so true. I feel like it did light up different parts of me, you know, to see it up close, like then compared with when I just look at them far away, or like you said, look at a picture or anything. So yeah, that was awesome. That was like one of my favorite parts of the trip, was being my cormorant friend.
Well, and like you were just talking about, you know, you see them sitting on the beach, just species sitting on the beach and just sleeping. And then you suddenly see them actually doing what they need to do to get a meal. And it's a whole different thing.
Yes. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. That was awesome.
So we had one more cool thing on that same kayaking trip. They took us to this tiny little island that I think was just made up of like mangroves, and they called it Bird Island. And so we went up and pulled up next to it, and it was just covered in like brown pelicans, snowy egrets, roseate spoonbills. But it reminded me of like, Shannon, you'd talked about before when you'd seen like a tree just full of roseate spoonbills. Like this only had a few of it, but it was just full of birds. It was like the entire tree was just, you know, it was just all these different colors. And it was like so cool just to see like that many birds all just out in the wild on their own. It was, I don't know, it was really cool.
The very first day we were in Costa Rica after we flew in at night, and that we went outside, and I remember getting out of the car, that we had rented and standing there and looking around, and there were houseplants that were, you know, 30 feet high. And it, I felt like I had been dropped in a terrarium, that, you know, that movie, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. But I felt like, yes, I'd been miniaturized and placed in this thing where really you see these things in your house, and you, well, if you're me, you kill them in your house, because I'm not a very good plant mother usually. And, you know, and there they are, and you're just sitting there looking at these houseplants. And then experiencing a whole new array of birds that you'd never seen before, doing things you'd never seen before, too. Had you ever seen a cormorant feed before, Amanda?
No, no. Yeah. That was the first time. You're right. That was incredible. Yeah.
Well, and you could see it. You could see it underwater, which is really unusual. I mean, you don't get to see them in water that's clear enough to actually see what they're doing a lot of times.
Oh, that's so awesome. I never thought about that, because that was what I spent a lot of time watching him go under my kayak and surface and stuff. So, yeah, it was so cool. So we have RJ and I have a friend who from Steamboat, who's in Costa Rica right now, and she's been sending us pictures of different birds. And Shannon, I totally get what you're saying about, like, being in a terrarium, because, like, Costa Rica looks like something else. It looks insane.
You should go, because Costa Rica is small enough and so diverse in its habitats that you can go from one coast all the way over the mountains to the other coast in a day. Although you won't want to, because there's too many places to stop along the way. But yeah, you know, so you really can experience so many different kinds of tropical habitats. Not just lowland forests or rainforests, but, you know, high montane forests, and watch the avifaunas change as you change both geography. There are dry parts of it, wet parts of Costa Rica, and it's very well suited for people to get around in there. Even if you golf, I always thought my mom and dad would like to go there, because, you know, it's really set up for people to do whatever they want to do. There's all kinds of water sports. There are black sand beaches, which I'd never even heard of before I went to Costa Rica, a black sand beach. It was unbelievable. There were monkeys along the black sand beach. It was
oh, cool.
Wow. Yeah.
Did you guys go for a bird trip, or for, was it a vacation?
We don't vacation. Are you kidding? No. Who does that?
No. It was actually for Shannon's dissertation research.
Oh, wow. Uh-oh. That but is we, pretty cool.
But we arrived in San Jose. We left at Christmas, on Christmas, day after Christmas in
Christmas
Louisiana.
Day. Yeah.
And gotten down below freezing that the night before in wow. Louisiana. And we got down to San Jose, and of course it was just beautiful. Mm. But the other thing we found out was that all the government agencies were closed for the holidays.
Oh.
So we ended up taking a five day car trip, just borrowing a car from a friend, and getting to see some of the country before we actually went out, did real field work after that.
That's awesome.
That's
good,
so
planning.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You remember the place with all the hummingbirds too? So we're just sitting on a patio, and they have bird feeders on the edges of the patio, and there were so many hummingbirds just coming in. Wow. Again, unlike anything I'd ever experienced before. My mom has hummingbird feeders now, and I love to watch the hummingbirds when I'm at her house. But I didn't do that growing up. I didn't really, I guess I would have seen hummingbirds in a book or read about them in a story or something, but certainly not really experienced them up close or paid that much attention to their behaviors or how many different kinds there were. I didn't think about them like that then.
Right.
We need to do a hummingbird episode.
Yes.
I'm surprised we haven't done one yet. I think you might have suggested it a few times. But yeah, we should get one on the books.
Yeah.
There are lots of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, Yeah, I feel like we totally have a new appreciation of like travel. It's like after, you know, this has really been a trip that we've done like since we've been into birding that we've like been able to take advantage of seeing all the different birds in a new place. Oh. That's been like awesome just to, I don't know, it's opened our eyes in like a new way. So yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, John and Shannon, for helping us with this too.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you travel with friends now, they're just going to think you're weird because your way of going on a vacation is completely changed. So I like,
it's already happened.
Yeah. We like to go places and have no plan, right? We just rent a car and we go wherever we want, stop wherever we want, get out for however long we want, get back in the car and go somewhere new. And that is not, I guess that is not common for the way people, they usually have planned vacations where they are, you know, they're scheduled to go to X place at Y time and do Z thing. Right. And I don't want that. I want to go places where my calendar doesn't matter anymore. I can go wherever I want to. I'm not being controlled by, you know, the fates of our work. So, and that makes for very strange vacations, very idiosyncratic.
That's so cool.
I love that you guys study birds and what's around, because that's just a monumental shift in knowledge availability for local areas compared to what it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're so right, John. Yeah. And we used the, RJ reminded me when we were in this wooded area, we were doing the sound thing with Merlin like 20 times because we were like, we don't know what any of this is and we can't see it because there was tons of leaves and stuff. So, yeah, this, you know, just to piggyback on what RJ said, like this new thing that we're doing, meaning birding, it added so much meaning to this vacation. It was like such a great experience. So, yeah, and you two are, you know, a big part of that. So thank you.
Birds are going to be protected. The more people that approach the world the way you just did, the more they'll care about habitat alteration, climate changing, product use, you know, those things all go together. So everybody should go outside and look at birds, change the way they go on vacations.
Yes.
Agreed.
Agreed.
All right. So I think we got our final four picked out for our round robin tournament, which is still going on. So I've been trying to debating on how we should do this. If we should vote on the final four between the four of us and then let our listeners vote on our social, or if we should each just plead our case for the final four and let our listeners vote. Do you guys have any thoughts?
I'm okay with having the listeners vote.
Okay.
I'm also okay with expressing my final opinion too.
Okay.
that's what I think, John. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But you've been wrong before, so.
Well, I'm always wrong.
John has a Mortal Kombat philosophy.
You're right. It is. He shows that in no other aspect of his life.
That's what was so funny. It was so surprising.
We had so much fun going back and listening to just like those little conversations we were having while we were voting. They were so much fun.
So I couldn't help but think when I looked at the agenda and see again what we were going to do, that who's going to be the Caitlin Clark of our final four?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Well, so the first matchup is the American Woodcock against the Shoebill. So this one, I don't know, I'm going to jump out in front and vote for this is an upset, but the American Woodcock, just because we've had so much fun seeing them.
Yes.
What the heck, Shoebill is... RJ? Are you joking?
No.
You're out of your mind. I know, it's an upset. No, the Shoebill, every day and all day on Sunday, it's the Shoebill. Woodcocks do one thing cool. Okay, well, they go up in the air and they have this really fun fly down to the ground, but they don't eat lungfish. Their eyes aren't shaped that way. They don't look prehistoric. They're not 4 feet tall. They don't go in swamps in Africa. No offense. Yes. I mean,
none taken. It's It's a it's personal
for
me.
What do you think, Amanda?
Yeah, so I'm with RJ, but just because you don't have to go to Africa to see the woodcock. We've seen them the past couple of weekends. We've gone to Middle Fork, and last week we actually spent a lot of time in the early evening before they started their displays and just saw them on the ground and, yeah, just fell more in love with them. So I'm with RJ. What about you, Jen?
I'm going Timber Doodle.
Oh, you guys are shocked.
You guys are shocked. You could not be more wrong.
As a former basketball player who was short, I'm just saying it's a bit of an upset because the Timber Doodles can shoot the three, and that causes problems for the taller shoe bill.
Yes. A Cinderella story.
The shoe bill is going to eat a woodcock for lunch and still be hungry. So
That's awesome. Also true. Yeah, that's also true.
All right. So on the other side, we have, so I was kind of surprised. It was fun watching all of our listeners vote. But so advancing to the final four, it's the Raven against the Atlantic Puffin. This one I'm torn on.
I feel like the Atlantic Puffin is a bit of a like a 7th-8th seed getting to the finals, and Raven is in there legitimately because they're so smart and things. And so I'm going Raven on this one because I think the Puffin did well getting all the way to where it did, but it's not going any farther.
It was helped by you, John. You picked the wrong puffin too, but anyway, no, I have to go with the Raven. I mean, among the smartest animals that have ever lived, people have a run for their money in ravens.
I'm going Raven too.
They're
so impressive with how smart they are, and I feel like Shannon, you're always sending us stuff where we're so fascinated to like just learn about how. Yeah, just how smart they are. And I feel like we've learned the most about them, too. It's like, I don't know, I can continue to be impressed by them every time I hear a new story about something that a raven can do. So
when you said that, it just dawned on me that my family and our students shouldn't feel that they're the only people I torture with bird stories. By text.
It's us, too.
Uh-oh. Yes.
No, we love it. We love it.
Yeah.
We totally love it. I'm with all of you. I'm with the Raven too. Yeah. And I feel like, no offense to the Atlantic Puffin, but like I like the birds that I might see more commonly. So that's another plus for the Raven.
If you gotta travel more.
I know.
If you go to where I grew up, you'll hear ravens more than you'll hear crows.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
So we'll let our listeners vote on that. So we'll post a poll in our social.
Awesome. I'm voting for write-in candidates.
That doesn't work in this thing. But you're out.
Yes, it
you're
does.
Out.
You don't get. You're not the decider. You're not the boss of me.
Oh my gosh.
Who would you write in, Shannon?
Yeah.
I'm writing the shoe bill in. You kidding me?
Oh, the shoe bill. I thought maybe you were going to say like the brown creeper or something.
No, I might write in the bluebird of paradise, but.
Oh, nice.
The brown creeper went far, Shannon. The brown creeper had a good run.
Yeah.
It's adorable.
It is adorable.
I could write in lots. Just make a big ballot.
Shannon.
There's always next year.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And Shannon, you're going to vote in your first American election coming up, right?
I am. I voted in the primary. I had no idea what I was doing.
Did you write in all the candidates?
I've never voted in my adult life, right? There was no Canadian federal election before I left to move to the United States to go to graduate school. So I've lived a really long time without being an adult. being taxed without representation, really. So yeah, it was fun. I feel like the whole thing is kind of weird. because I'm still so fundamentally Canadian, but I'm so grateful to the things that have happened to me in this country that I want the things that I value. I want to be able to have a say about the things that I value. And the only way you can do that is, well, an important way to do that, it's not the only way, is to express your opinion with voting. Mm-hmm. It's something that's, you know, fundamentally so American, certain aspects of voting, having free and fair elections. It's really important. So I'm a grown up now.
Yes, yes.
Welcome.
Way to go. That's awesome. I just brought it up because I was going to say, did you write in all the candidates for that?
Well, instead of some of the judges that I know very little about, I should start writing bird names. And we can have the shoe bill be the next
Cook County
clerk, something like that.
I think the Water Commission seems like a more appropriate.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay, I'll awesome. Buy that. Well, I'll have a campaign now that I'm allowed to do things like that, too.
All right. Well, should we close it out on this one?
Sure. I'll just say, you know, you guys had a great trip to Florida. I love all the things you saw, and people should recognize that that's the great thing about birds. You can go anywhere in the world and see different things than you see in right around you in a given place. And that's one of the great things about it.
Agreed.
Awesome. Right on.
Yeah.